I'm Chris Sims.
And I'm Todd McKay.
This is the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. We're dedicated to lower taxes, less waste, and more accountable government. In this episode, we're going to take a deep dive into the risk of fraud in some of the federal government's relief programs during this COVID-19 economic shutdown. It's really not a nice topic, but it does need to be talked through, so we're going to do that. And in Waste Watch, we're going to tell you about the City of Montreal. They're actually blowing more than $600,000 on bronze statues, and the statues are actually shaped like mushroom reproductive organs.
Yeah, it's going to get a bit weird.
It did.
We're going to keep this family friendly. So listen, if you're in the car and your kids are listening to this, like, don't worry. We're going to keep this, G-rated. But man, some government waste just gets weird.
Yeah,
so stay tuned for that.
I asked Renaud to explain the name of the statues, and then he did, and I couldn't quite believe it. So yeah, stay tuned for that.
It's weird. It's just weird. But here's another weird thing. Last week, we told you about ministers' regional offices that Ottawa has spread all across the country. But these regional ministers' offices don't have regional ministers. So NDP Member of Parliament Charlie Angus has been leading the charge to figure out why taxpayers have to pay for these offices. This week, he chatted with our investigative reporter, James Wood. And we want to bring some of those comments to all of you. Here's one theory that Mr. Angus floated about these regional ministers' offices that don't have regional ministers.
Maybe the government doesn't even know they have the offices. they've forgotten, but I don't think that's possible. I think they have them. I'd like to know why.
Now, I know Mr. Angus is joking. He's quite a colorful parliamentarian, but the situation really is ridiculous. Back in 2015, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau stopped appointing regional cabinet ministers. So before that, some cabinet minister would also have a form of a regional responsibility. So for example, if the finance minister were from Ontario, he or she would then serve as regional minister for Ontario and get a fancy office in Toronto. Same goes for Atlantic Canada. If you had a cabinet minister from that region, they might be appointed regional minister and they get a fancy office in Halifax. But the prime minister decided to get rid of regional ministers. They're not necessary. So he stopped appointing them 5 years ago, but he didn't close the physical offices. So taxpayers are still paying for a minister's regional offices, even though there are no regional ministers.
You know, and to his credit, Mr. Angus started demanding answers about ministers' regional offices a long time ago. He started asking questions about it during the Harper government as well. Here's a little bit more from Mr. Angus on this whole process and the history of it.
So I began to ask questions about that then, and we've never really gotten a clear sense of why and what they do, because the argument that, well, they're for the regional ministers, well, we don't have regional ministers. Number two, that they help arrange meetings when ministers come through the region is a ridiculous statement, because every community in the country of any size has a strong federal government presence. Meetings are arranged out of Ottawa. Staff come with the minister. So I wanted to see if the Trudeau government had just done the right thing and got done away with them. If they're redundant, I was expecting to see that these offices had been shut down or there was just a few left for very specific purposes, and yet the money keeps going to them.
You know, it's real money that is going to these ministers' regional offices, too. We're not paying for a fax machine and a stack of paper here. Taxpayers are on the hook for about $3 million every year.
Yeah, and that's clearly driving Mr. Angus a bit crazy. And to be honest, government waste drives people crazy on all sides of the political spectrum. Here at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we fight waste because we want lower taxes. If government spends less, then it doesn't need to take as much from us in taxes. Mm-hmm. But surely we can all agree that it's dumb to spend taxpayers' money on ministers' regional offices that don't have regional ministers. Feels weird that we even have to say that out loud. We'll give Mr. Angus the last word on this one.
I don't have a problem with the government spending money if the money is being spent to help people and to further the development of our regions. I have a big problem with spending money on offices with staff to serve ministers that aren't there.
Coming up next, Todd is going to take a deep dive and explore what's going on with our federal relief programs and the unfortunate risk of fraud with our federal director, Aaron Woodrick. Stay with us.
It's time for a deep dive. This is a part of the show where we get deeper into important issues, and Aaron Woodrick, our federal director, is here because we got some worrying news about the Canada Emergency Response Benefit. We need to talk that through.
Yeah, so you're talking, Todd, about the program also known as the CERB, C-E-R-B. And before we get into concerns about the CERB, we should make something pretty clear here. You should never defraud the government. Never, ever do that. It's true that the CTF is all about lower taxes, is what we fight for every day. To be clear, people should not be stealing money from the government. They should not be applying for programs that they're not eligible to apply.
And listen, I mean, the overwhelming majority of Canadians are honest about their taxes and benefits, but that's a good reminder, and it's especially important right now, given what you're going to read from the National Post for us.
Yeah, the Post recently broke a bombshell story regarding an internal government memo, and I want to read a passage from it. Quote, effective immediately while processing a claim, if an agent uncovers information that suggests potential abuse of the EI system by a client, an employer, or a third party, they do not impose a stop pay and do not refer the file to integrity unless it is considered an urgent investigation.
I'm going to read between the lines here and try to translate the bureaucratese a little bit. It kind of sounds like the government's telling bureaucrats to send checks for EI or CERB, even if they think the application isn't eligible or potentially fraudulent. That's shocking.
Yeah, it's certainly the concern that's being raised by Tom Blackwell at the National Post in his piece. He cited a confidential whistleblower, a government employee, and wrote the following, quote, the memo does outline exceptions, urgent matters that should be referred for investigation, such as applications on behalf of dead people, dormant social insurance numbers, those that were never used until the benefit claim was processed, and false records of employment. But the source said even evidence of fraudulent employment records is being overlooked and CERB or EI paid out regardless.
Okay, so I think we need to take a step back on the CERB program generally and just talk about the scale of this particular issue. So CERB pays out about $2,000 a month from Ottawa if you've lost your job because of the pandemic shutdown. You can also get CERB if your work is now paying you less than $1,000 a month. And almost 8 million people have already applied for the program. I don't think anybody's entirely sure what the final price tag is going to be, but it's going to be billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah, it's going to be tens of billions. So just, you know, some quick math, about 8 million, $2,000 a month. That's $16 billion per month. And it's a 4-month program. So it's going to be at least $64 billion, which is a massive sum of money any way you slice it. And the government's own estimates are about a 2-3% fraud rate. So let's assume it's low, it's 2%. You're still looking at $300-400 million per month in fraudulent payments.
$300-400 million a month is a massive amount of money, even in the context, today's context of billions of dollars flying out the door from every level of government. $300-400 million is a ton of money. So I think at this point, we need to get an explanation from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau as to what his view is on dealing with fraud in the CERB program. Here's a clip from Prime Minister Trudeau.
If we had asked the public service to perform background checks on everyone applying for the CERB, we'd still be waiting to get those checks out. And people needed that money. Now they needed that money last month when we delivered it. We have put in strong measures to ensure that anyone who is trying to defraud the system will get caught and there will be consequences. But that was not our priority. Our priority was helping people immediately, and the fraud measures will kick in the coming months.
Now, it's of course true that the COVID crisis hit really fast and governments around the world were scrambling to respond to it. And we also know that when governments move really quickly, there's going to be some mistakes. There's going to be waste. But there's got to be some balance here. And I think there's a legitimate question about whether government is getting that balance right, that balance between speed and integrity of the system. So here's an exchange between conservative finance critic Pierre Poilievre and Finance Minister Bill Morneau at a finance committee.
Well, it's your government has told bureaucrats to send out checks even when they detect fraud. The CBC is reporting that prisoners are receiving the checks at their jailhouses. How many prisoners does your government believe it has sent $2,000 checks to so far?
Well, again, I will go back to our objectives here, which is to make sure that we are getting the support to the broadest number of Canadians impacted by COVID-19. And obviously, we're very encouraged that the programs are having such just a significant number. Impact on so many Canadians.
So that was a finance committee meeting where Pierre Poilievre and Finance Minister Bill Morneau were going back and forth. The government says it doesn't want to slow things down. It's got to get the checks out to people who need help. So they don't want to slow down worrying about fraud. The opposition is saying, hey, wait a second, you got to take care of taxpayers' money here. You know, we've looked into this. We've talked about it a lot. Maybe tell folks where the Canadian Taxpayers Federation is coming down on this issue.
Well, you know, you and I and others on the CTF team, we've talked about this at length, and it's obviously a unique situation. But look, we all understand that these programs got rolled out really quickly. The government was scrambling. It wasn't going to be perfect. But that can't mean that the government gets a complete pass on protecting taxpayers' money. So, I mean, first of all, the government needs to be crystal clear in its communication that fraud is wrong, that you shouldn't do it, and that there's going to be consequences if you do. The fact that the government sent these memos to their own employees telling them to look the other way on fraud and not even try to stop that. And according to a federal officials, by the way, who spoke to the CBC, they said they're not even going to look into them until at least 2021, so more than half a year away. And in the meantime, they basically hung a sign out in the window saying there are no consequences for stealing taxpayer money. So it's a very bad message. It's a dangerously mixed message that the government says it'll go after fraud someday, but at the same time, it's sending a memo to its employees to stand down. So, step one, the government should get this crystal clear and tell everyone fraud is wrong. There will be consequences if you do it.
It kind of feels weird that we even have to say out loud that fraud is wrong. Every corner store in the country knows that even putting out a sign like, shoplifters will be prosecuted, that can make a difference. It won't stop everybody. You know, but that one kid who's trying to put a chocolate bar in a pocket, it can make a difference there. So what else should the government be doing to reduce this fraud and protect taxpayers' money?
Well, one thing it could be doing is strengthening fraud investigation as it goes along. Look, the trade-off for the government getting some slack cut for rushing out the programs is that there's an expectation that they're going to fix them and improve them as they go along. So there are a lot of people providing constructive criticism on how they can improve these programs. And this is one of them. You know, if you see fraud, you should crack down on it. We're never going to stop all of the fraud, but the government should at least be trying and they should be doing better and better as they go. You know, and that's particularly true of CERB because the applications happen monthly. So you have to apply again every month to get the next 2,000. If someone took 2,000 fraudulently but were caught, you know, within the month, then at least you save taxpayers, you know, the next 3 months of them of stealing $2,000. So just like every cop will never catch every speeder, if they pull over, you know, a couple of cars and other drivers see that, that gives everybody a pretty good reason to slow down. So, you know, the government needs to make clear that it's doing its best to nail fraudsters as it goes along here.
You know, and at very minimum, bureaucrats should be warning people if they're not eligible and letting them know that they'll probably have to pay the money back and could even be prosecuted. At very least, give people the heads up, be clear and honest with them. That's something that the government could do. It doesn't need to slow things down. At least be clear and honest with people that if you're taking money you're not supposed to get, it could be a problem for you and everybody else down the road.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's another group that we haven't even really talked about. We've been talking so far about people who are deliberately defrauding the system. But there are also going to be other people who are getting this money because they don't understand the criteria. And they're going to be hit with a very nasty surprise next spring when tax time rolls around if they're asked to pay back $8,000 because they didn't understand that they should not have been applying for this program. And, you know, and on that note, I want to play one more clip from that finance committee meeting.
I want to make one point, and it relates to the question on fraud. I think you gave a a fairly clear answer. The answer hasn't to be honest, hasn't been clear from the minister or the prime minister on that issue. And I think it needs to be stated clearly that the government is not going to accept what is clearly fraud, but there is going to be a lot of errors out there. I have constituents who were on EI, went back to work, but because they automatically got enrolled in CERB, had no way of saying they were going back to work, they come home and they had a $2,000 check. A deposit, they called worried about what would happen. I actually had to write a letter to them saying that, look, this was an error on the government's part. Continue to work. Don't spend the $2,000. Set it aside. And when things settle out here, that money can be paid back. So those kind of errors are going to happen in a fast-moving system like this. But the government has to make it clear that we are not going to accept what is outright fraud, and that money will be hauled back in.
And that was a Liberal Member of Parliament, Wayne Easter. He's been a Member of Parliament for 25 years, and he's the chair of the Finance Committee. And in that clip, he's calling it like he sees it and pointing out that the Prime Minister and the Finance Minister have been very unclear when it comes to the fraud issue. So just some very simple common sense from a veteran Liberal MP. When his constituent got a CERB payment by mistake, he sent them a letter, told them not to spend it because he's probably going to have to pay it back. So, you know, a very simple, clear way to let his constituent know that that fraud is unacceptable and it would be a problem. So the government would do really well to listen to one of its own MPs on this.
Yeah, and we're jumping in on this issue at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. We're calling on the Trudeau government to do something pretty simple. Tell people that fraud won't be tolerated. Be clear. Send a clear message. You can't steal money from taxpayers. And the government needs to at least start catching some of the worst fraudsters. At least try. That's going to make a difference overall, and that's the government's responsibility. They take our money through taxes. The least the government can do is do its best to take care of it. So if you want to get involved in this, we've launched a petition demanding that the government take more action to protect taxpayers' money, get the help out quick, but do a good job and make sure that fraudsters aren't stealing it. Check out the show notes to sign the petition or head on over to taxpayer.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Sorry for interrupting the podcast, but I wanted to take a few seconds of your time to tell you more about the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. We are 235,000 Canadians from coast to coast that are fed up. We are fed up with politicians taking too much out of our paychecks, often to waste it on a bunch of pet projects, corporate welfare, and pork barreling to buy votes. We organize campaigns to push back on these politicians. These campaigns often include petition drives, billboards, media stunts, and more. But most importantly, they ask our supporters to pitch in and take action. Alone, we're a voice in the wilderness. Together, we're an army to be reckoned with. You can join the fight and sign up at no cost at taxpayer.com. That website again is taxpayer.com. Okay, now back to the podcast.
It's time for Waste Watch. This is the funny and infuriating part of our show. We expose the dumb things governments are wasting your money on. Joining me now is my friend and colleague, Renaud Brassard. He is the Quebec director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Renaud, what do you have for us today?
Chris, imagine your credit cards are maxed out, your bank account's almost empty. You basically have $100 till the end of the month. Would you spend that money on groceries or would you spend it on the entertainment?
I have unfortunately been in those tight situations several times before. You're always going to spend it on groceries.
Well, then you just wouldn't fit in at Montreal City Hall. Mm-hmm. For the past few weeks, Montreal Mayor Valérie Plante has made repeated calls for financial assistance from the governments in Quebec and in Ottawa to avoid going broke. And yet just last week, Montreal City Hall managed to find more than $600,000 to commission some artists to make a brand new art installation.
Okay, you mentioned this a bit before we got recording here. My head nearly blew up. You got to be kidding me. 600 grand?
Sadly, I'm not. At the moment, it's estimated that COVID crisis will leave a $500 million hole in Montreal's budget. Oof. That's a whole lot of money. And for those not familiar with Montreal's budget, which I assume are going to be most of our listeners. That's about 10% of the city's entire budget for 2020. It's huge. And things are so bad that Mayor Plante said the city cannot make it in the long run without Quebec and Ottawa's help.
You know, we're in a strange time. You've got fewer people buying homes, fewer people using paid city services, fewer people paying for public transit, fewer people speeding on the roads and paying for traffic tickets. Cities across Canada are collecting a lot less tax money nowadays.
And to its credit, Montreal City Hall has started to make some cuts. They've cut about $123 million from their budget. Now, it's a far cry from the $500 million hole that COVID will leave in its budget, but at least it was headed in the right direction. That is, of course, until they decided that spending a whopping $600,000 on a brand new art installation was something that they absolutely needed to do.
Okay, wait a minute. Let's back up for a second. I'm sorry. Did we get this right? City Hall said it's broke, but then it spent $600,000 after they said they were broke? Did I get that right?
You got that right. The city's executive council. Now, that's the equivalent of the cabinet in other levels of government, has approved a $632,362.50 budget on May 13th for an art installation. You got to give them credit for being very precise in their estimates. They even included the 50 cents in there.
50 cents, okay.
The installation is named Spore Force, and it consists of about a dozen modernist bronze sculptures that are going to be installed along a pedestrian path on a new university campus being constructed in the city.
Sporophores, what does that mean? Do you know?
Let me find the right word. Sporophores in French would refer to a mushroom's reproductive organ. So we're basically putting 12 giant sculptures representing mushrooms' reproductive organs in the Strait of Montreal for about $600,000.
Okay. So Montreal says it's so broke, it needs financial assistance from provincial and federal taxpayers. But at the same time, it's spending over $500,000 on these mushroom reproductive organ art pieces.
You know, for a city, begging for Quebec and Canadian taxpayers' money should always be a last resort. It shouldn't be done until every single penny spent on non-essential budget items has been cut. It's just a matter of basic respect. People across the country are working hard for their money. And, well, any way you look at it, spending $600,000 on a dozen bronze mushroom reproductive organs is not essential spending.
I can't believe we need to say this.
I know, right? I never thought I'd say this at any point in my life.
No.
And yet we have to do this, apparently. You know, while Montreal's example is quite outrageous, and rightly so, I think. It isn't alone in making this kind of wasteful spending these days. You know, across the country, provinces and cities have adopted laws that call for 1% of new infrastructure spending to be spent on public art. In Quebec, that law dates from 1961.
1961?
Yeah, it is quite an old law. Wow. But there's those kinds of laws all around the country. And I have yet to hear from a single mayor or a provincial politician saying that they have suspended those requirements as a result of the crisis. Now look, 1% might not look like much,
no,
but 1% of new infrastructure funds is quite a whole lot of money, because those infrastructure projects cost millions, sometimes even billions of dollars. So saving 1% of those would save taxpayers quite a good chunk of change all across the country.
And you know, you're right, because even right here in BC, cities like Vancouver and Victoria and smaller places like Abbotsford and Kelowna, they've got these kinds of public art spending bylaws in place, and they unfortunately can blow plenty of money on pointless public art. I know Calgary's public arts program, for example, has been a favorite of our Waste Watch stories here at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. You know which one I'm talking about, don't you? You know which one.
Oh, so, yeah, the one that lets a double hole in taxpayers' pockets.
Exactly, a double hole, because one of Calgary's public art installations, the sculpture is made of metal that is so shiny, it refracts the sun's rays and will burn holes in your clothes if you get too close to it. So that one's right up there. And then also there was the one in Toronto. They had an interactive transit commission that put up a display. It was a digital billboard, basically. And they let people put their own messages on it. But of course, people started swearing and cussing, and they had to take it down. You know, who knew that wasn't going to work? Renaud, thank you so much for keeping an eye on this spending in Quebec.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, I think it's quite important to keep an eye out for that kind of spending all across the country. We're talking, you know, about Montreal's example, those other public card examples from across the country. But a lot of those stories were broken thanks to the CTF's work. And we were able to point out to taxpayers how their money was being wasted, and in some cases make some get some great victories thanks to this.
Yes, exactly. And if we don't speak up and we don't hold politicians to account, they'll just keep wasting our money. Renaud, thank you so much for this. And for our listeners, if you have any wasteful public art spending taking place in your community, please help us out. Blow that whistle. The best thing you can do is, number one, take a picture of the art. And then number two, send us a message and that picture. Our email address is updates@taxpayer.com. Once again, the email address, updates@taxpayer.com. Who knows? It just might make it on a future show. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast.
You know, Chris, it sounds to me from that waste wash segment that you're suddenly learning French, becoming bilingual, but you're starting in a weird part of the language there.
I agree. Kind of took me off guard. I just asked Renaud what that weird name meant, and he fully explained it to me, unfortunately. So yeah, $600,000 on bronze statues, that's bad enough, but they're actually shaped like mushroom stuff. So go
figure.
Sometimes
you can ask a simple question and get a really, really weird answer. I think that you got that one. Hey, thank you to James Wood for editing this podcast. Really appreciate him taking out the chaff, trying to leave behind something that's worth listening to. Appreciate his hard work there. And also thank you to James Wood for tracking down Charlie Angus and getting some really interesting thoughts on the minister's regional offices. It's a crazy story. It's great to see that Mr. Angus is on it and obviously will stay on it as well. For the rest of you, I have a little favor to ask from our listeners. We need more reviews on our show. If you have a good review, if you like the show, we'd love to see that, obviously. I'll be honest with you. We'd love to see good reviews. But you know what? If you have suggestions, if you want to give us a little bit of a prod to do better, you know, put that in the reviews too. We need to have more reviews. We want to make the show better. So please give us a review. But you know what? No matter what you think of the show, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. We're going to keep trying to make it better.
Hi, I'm Scott Hennig, president of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. If you've got another minute, I'd like to ask you to think about the one person you know that would really enjoy listening to this podcast. Do us a favor and do them a favor and send them a quick note to let them know about it. At the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we believe there is power in numbers. That's why we've worked so hard to build an army of taxpayers who are ready to push back. And we did it because people like you shared our work with that one person that they knew would really appreciate taking part. Thanks for listening, and thanks for doing your part to make Canada a better place.